Blog Talk Radio.
Our life to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we have attitude. We're moving, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
Boxing fans, this is the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast. I am your host, Chris Carlson. We are live on a We're live on a Monday night, a little bit different. Hope everybody's doing okay. Man, do we have a lot to talk about? Okay, there we go. Whoever just called in, if you're listening to the browser, you can call back in. I don't know what happened. It dropped you or whatever, but you can pop. Okay, there. Yeah. It's starting to let people in now. I don't know what happened at the start. But anyway, kind of a weird start. But, hey, we are back, and, boy, do we have a lot to talk about, man. This is why you got to love the sport. You can say whatever you want about Ryan Garcia, anything you want, but it doesn't matter, man. The guy won the fight with his power. He used, he kind of used his jab. He used his right hand. That's for damn sure. He used the shoulder roll turn his back. I mean, there was a lot of stuff. Those left hooks were the difference in the fight. Big, big knockdowns, three of them. I mean, what, 30, 40 seconds in, he hurt him? It was like, whoa, okay, well, here we are. We're into this one. So, yeah, we're definitely going to go round by round, break it all down. What a hell of a win. Like I said, I had unfollowed Ryan Garcia. I had muted him a little bit. I just couldn't really – I was pretty much zoned out of the promotions in the last few weeks. You know, I was kind of popping in here and there, but – some of the stuff that he was doing, the Baltimore Bridge thing put me over. The George Floyd thing put me over. I thought, well, there was, I already expressed this before. So, but I'm not biased. What happens in that ring happens in that ring. You know what I'm saying? If a good fight is signed or whatever happens, I'm not going to sit there and, you know, go nuts over nothing, you know? And this was not nothing. I mean, you know, we talked about it. I'm not going to sit there and say that I predicted it because I didn't. But we did talk about how, man, it seems like the odds are far. I remember seeing a plus 640, and we started talking about even a knockout was in the 800s, plus 800s. And, you know, even that the decision, right, which I sure would have wish I would have put like a couple hundred on that. I did put a little money on it, just like I said I was going to, because, you know, once you get up plus 1,000 and above, this was the plus, what was it, plus 1,132 or some shit like that. I can't remember what it was exactly, but it was just too far of odds, you know what I mean? Now, I also put the money on Haney, don't get me wrong. I picked him by decision, but you know, we knew if Ryan was going to win on decision, it would have to be that he hurt him and he knocked him down more than once, more than likely. He sure did. So we're going to get into it. Like I said, Ryan Garcia, man, a lot of people would have written him off after this fight had he lost, especially how, you know, round after round there for a while, he wasn't doing a whole lot. So, man, I'm still kind of like, wow. And, you know, it's funny. Like, as the week wears on, you start to kind of think, huh, maybe he not just – it's not about trolling. Clearly he's got some issues, and clearly the social media thing he's leaning all the way into. And there's a variety of stuff when it comes to it, but it still felt like the odds were too wide. But then when he was over 3 pounds, it was like 3.2 or whatever. It was like, oh, man, what kind of camp did he even have? It didn't appear he had a full great camp, but wow, this kind of proves it to you. So you kind of thought, well, I actually kind of put the stoppage on the table at that point again. Like, I thought he could maybe stop him saying Ryan Garcia. I thought it'd be late, maybe a TKO, but I wasn't 100% sold that would happen. I thought this would be a distance fight. But man, like I said, we'll get into it. We'll talk a little bit about the undercard. Barbosa got a gift. David Jimenez, man. Wow. He was out boxing, out brawling. I mean, he just beat him up. That was a great performance over Scrappy. I mean, how many rounds could you even give Scrappy past the first couple? I think he won. Well, we'll get into it. Conwell looked good. Beck didn't. His eye was a little messed up there, obviously, with that cut. We'll talk a little bit of, you know, just other stuff from the weekend, overtime. And we had a huge upset, actually, beyond just the main event. But and then, you know, Jose Ramirez, Virgil Ortiz, they're returning this week. The opponent is not great. I guess you could say, you know, Golden Boy is due for a mediocre card, right? Because they've had a good year so far. But it does get these guys back. Virgil Arzi, you know, will be a second fight. And then hopefully both of them will be in a big fight, you know, maybe late summer or something like that. And then, you know, we'll talk about this, you know, other fights this weekend. Pro Box has a fight. Friday night there's a fight. So DAZN has a fight. There's some other, you know, items we'll talk about. We also did get the official Tank Frank and Benavidez Voshtik announcement. So we know that's now official for June 15th, not June 22nd. It was kind of bouncing back and forth between that. But and also it looks like this David Morrell K-Rod, it kind of looks like my sources are maybe right. That might be the June fight in Minneapolis here at the Armory. We will see. We'll get into it, though. If this is your first time listening to the Rope and Dope Radio Podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeandoperadio. You don't have to go to Blog Talk and Rope and Dope and download the show directly there. If you don't want to, you can find this year's podcast, Rope and Dope Radio, under Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio. Download the podcast app, Player FM, Google Podcasts, Podbay, Podtail, Podbean. Basically, just Google it, Rope and Dope Radio. While you're at it, head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. Eastside Boxing, Phil Boxing, one more thing from DirecTV Stream, man, it's playoff time. See the buckets and the goals that will crown champions all on DirecTV Stream, plus save $30. Also, MLB is in full swing. Home field advantage. DirecTV Stream carries the most local MLB games. There's no hidden fees, no annual contract. Play ball for a limited time. $98.99 for your first 3 months. That out right now, just the first month of DirecTV Sports Pack. If you have DirecTV or whatever, you know, new signups, it's a savings of $15, $14.99 to be exact. Choose the package that's right for you for DirecTV Stream. The Entertainment and Sports Pack right now, that's the that's kind of the lower tier one. There's three tiers. $84.98 for 3 months. Okay, so, man, like I said, say whatever you want. Say that, you know, I'm already hearing excuses about the weight, but he agreed. He agreed to it. And I'm talking about he beat me, meaning Devin Haney. Now, you know, does getting, you know, down an extra 3 pounds affect you? You know, I mean, that picture that he showed before the weigh-in, He didn't look so good. Yeah, it does affect you. So for, you know, Devin having to go down those extra 3 pounds, it definitely affects the body, right? In the mind, I guess you could say. Now, you know, I mean, does adding 20 or 25 pounds in a 24-hour period help you as a fighter, you know, compared to your opponent sometimes? Sure, it does. It definitely does, and that's what Devin Haney does, and many others, by the way. So it is what it is, just like Ryan Garcia and Tank Davis. It's like he agreed to it. Depending on which interview you listen to before the fight, in one hand he was saying that he's trying to drain me, and he said he was drained and all that after the fight. On the other hand, you hear other interviews, they're saying we're happy we got the 136, you know. We're happy we got all this stuff, that we don't blow way up in weight, and that they actually fooled him, and they feel great. I remember this interview he had eating tacos saying he feels fine, he's going to be just fine. So it is what it is, man. If you agree, if you sign that dotted line, that's on you. It is. That's boxing, dude. It is what it is. Anyway, like I said, 40 seconds in, left hooked lands during an exchange, and that's the key thing that makes Ryan Garcia deadly. The left hook speed, we know that, or the left hook power and then speed. But to be able to do it during the exchange, that makes it tough, man. It's not like he's just only lunging with the left hook all the time. Now, he did plenty of that. But, you know, and we also talked about how Haney, the left hook has been open, especially when he jabs and sometimes when he throws right hands as well. He leans in so much that he does leave himself open. And just recently, I shouldn't even say recently because the Loma fight wasn't that long ago, but there was a stretch there, Kambosos and back-to-back fights, Kambosos and then, you know, Prograis really couldn't take advantage of it, you know. Lomachenko's, you know, a different beast compared to those guys offensively, but you saw Linares, you saw Jojo Diaz, and I know those fights were a while ago, but they still stand to count and make sense, right? Now, don't get me wrong, I thought he got better after those fights. And it's not like all he did was hold throughout the whole, you know, when he was hurt now, or you know, on it, you know, because when he got hurt against Linares, he, you know, bear hugged forever. Now, don't get me wrong, he hugged, but he recouped enough in the offense again. Then he'd get hurt. Then it was offense again. Then he'd get hurt. Like I said, he did, I'd say, late in that first round, or in that, you know, I thought he did okay. He was able to recoup a little bit and start to press, and he landed his own hook and was jabbing and stuff by the end of that. But even after he buzzed him, he followed up with some more hooks, a nice right hand to the body, uppercuts. He was letting his shots go. Second round came around. I gave that to Haney, and Haney made, you know, a sizable run here in the middle of the fight, or not the middle, but in these rounds here. You know, to me, he had a good up jab. You know, he had the jab right hand going. And second round, third round, you started to see Garcia flash that shoulder roll. And, you know, when you're in there with a puncher, that's not going to work. But he wasn't in there with a puncher. He wasn't in there with a puncher. He was allowed to do the shoulder roll for a while, but then allowed to kind of turn his back as well. Like I said, the referee, Harvey Dock, had a rough night. On one hand, I don't know, it just seemed like there were so many clinches that if someone's going to clinch, because they both clinched, you know, I would say Haney maybe held more just because he was hurt. But overall, there's plenty of times where after Haney would recoup, Garcia would be the one putting him in the headlock and holding right away. So my thing is, I think that he should have let him fight out of the clinch and one hand free type stuff, let that work out. I think that would have helped. Or just start warning more and more about it. One or the other. You got to do something. You can't just allow some of the stuff that's going down. And then also, like, he just got in there too quick. You know, there could have been another knockdown, yada, yada, yada. But like I said, for me, Haney kind of got his shit back together. And I gave him the second round. I thought the third and fourth were pretty close. I gave Haney the third. It seemed like Garcia at that time was kind of missing his shots, a little wide with his hooks and whatnot. I think he got a little like, okay, dude, I already hurt him. I'm going to just wing these things and not have to set it up. I thought the fourth round was really close. I don't know, the jabs, the right hands. I think there was a left hook that was late that you could have gave it to Haney or Garcia, one or the other. I thought some right hands and like a little flurry in the round or kind of earlier in the round could have done it. I don't know. That was, for me, that was a close round, but I could see, you know, for those who gave it to Haney, I gave the fifth and the sixth round to Haney. Once again, jabbing, you know, applying some pressure, working the head, you know, jabs to the body and the head. And also, like, I think it was like a late right hand by Garcia in the fifth. But in the sixth, you know, in this middle part, there were some times where he was just on his bike so much. And Haney would land some decent shots. He wasn't able to cut the ring off. But, you know, I definitely gave him that. Then the seventh round came around. And, you know, there was a knockdown and a point deduction. Now, did I think it warranted a point deduction at that time? It was the first time, I believe, it was blatant. We see blatant hits during the clinch or whatever. We see that without it getting called. So I don't have a problem with the call, but if you're going to make that call, then you have to be on top of everything. Then you can't just be like, oh, I'm going to do that. So it did deduct that knockdown in the seventh, obviously. Now, was that a 10-8 round straight up? What, was Haney even doing anything, you know, enough to even have it just be a 10? Or, you know, people say 10-10, 9-9. That's a 10-point must system. So it could have been a 10-8. Because it was a 10-8 plus the knockdown, or plus the eraser, you know. Maybe just straight up, you thought it was a 10-8, then 10-7, then take it back to 10-8. 9-8, you know, just at home, but at least 10-9, I would, obviously. But that left hook, you know, hurt him bad. It looked like Haney's legs were really, really hurt. They looked nearly gone at that point. And, you know, more bombs. Like I said, though, you know, Haney went into kind of hold and tackle mode. And he was on the mat, what, twice beyond the knockdown? Maybe one of those was a knockdown. I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, you know, I think, like I said, it could have been a 10-8 round straight up, even with the knockdown if he was that hurt. So that would be 10-7. So it's depending how you score that round. But then in the eighth round, early hooks and crosses with the right hand by Garcia. You know, he was kind of mixing that in and then moving. But he kind of held the second part of that round, too. A little too much, but for me, Haney was missing too much in that round. Haney was missing too much for me in that one. So I couldn't really give him that round. So, you know, could have been 10-10. I gave it 10-9, but, you know, it was, I don't know, it wasn't that competitive. I thought the second half was pretty slow. Then Haney, though, kind of got his shit together, started throwing the jab again, started landing that right hand to the body, and a couple lead left hooks, started throwing his left hook to the body as well, because that was the thing about that shoulder roll slash turn your body almost to where there's really no target, that was kind of a funky thing because there are other parts of the body you can hit, I guess, but not really when a guy's doing that. You know, he was definitely turning his back more and more in that one. So I definitely gave Haney that. And then the 10th round, you know, early in the 10th round, a big right hand and a left hook knocked him down. You see Haney in hold mode again, of course, circling a lot. But, you know, then he kind of steadied himself and went back to the jab mostly anyway, but he was coming forward by the end of it. So I thought that was pretty damn impressive, really. But, I mean, that jab, you know, jab left hook, you know, later in that round, it just, you know, his legs buckled again. It looked like he was in trouble again, you know what I mean? But once again, writing in my notes, the ref has to allow these guys to work their way out a little bit. And if it's constant clinching, then start to warn them on that. Maybe that'll lessen it up, or you can start to deduct. That'll probably lessen it right there. So I don't know. That one was a little funky. But, yeah, I mean, 10-8 round, and then the 11th, probably like maybe around a minute left in that round, I believe it was. It was a right-hand left hook. It was a short shot. It was kind of a crafty little delivery system, I guess you could say, and it snapped Haney's head back. And that one where you're like, oh, wow, dude. Like, you could just see it was like a car crash almost, you know, like the way he landed that left hook. And I think this is the one where there was that someone did it in slow motion or in fast motion, too. I've seen it clipping it up on Twitter saying, oh, he got it. You know, Haney got hurt because of an elbow, you know, and it was more like framing, if anything, but he didn't even hit him with this elbow before he landed that left hook. But you could say he framed it, you know, there's such a thing as framing it and moving a guy's guard a little bit or blinding him a little bit, like I said, or just straight up framing it. And, you know, by that time, in the fight, like, Haney was either holding or super hesitant. You know, he was real hesitant. You could see he never really quite got the distance down, never could gauge all that well, am I in range for that fucking left hook, you know? And he was timid, hesitant. I give him credit, though. The dude was hurt a lot, and he kept getting up, kept getting up, kept getting up, and you know, so you got to credit him a lot, man. You got to credit him a lot. And so much so that, you know, I gave him the last round. You know, he was, I'd say, mostly the body. That's pretty much, you know, pretty much what was open. You saw Garcia kind of clowning at the end. And by that time, you also could see Haney's jaw, because his left side was swollen up pretty crazy. And the last, like, throughout this fight, Derek James was really doing a good job of motivating Ryan Garcia, keeping him focused. Even after that left round, you know, he could see that Garcia, and even throughout the fight, like I said, but especially that, I should say that 11th going in the 12th, when he came to the corner, he was talking to the side, he was doing this, he's looking at the crowd, like, you know, and Derek, like, was like, sit down, dude. You know, we got one round left. Hold on, dude. And he kind of pointed to both sides, like, basically, like, just shut up for a second. Let me talk to this guy. You know what I mean? And you could even see after that, I saw the replay again, and his brother looked like he was a little mad that Derek shut him up. But, and you could see it worked, though, because Ryan, not just because he won the fight, but Ryan Garcia, like, kind of put his arms around him, like, all right, dude, I got you, you know. You got me focused, you know. And it's like, dude, you're right here. Don't do anything stupid. But it's not over. It's not over, you know. So, like I said, through rounds 2 to, like, 6, and sometimes throughout this fight when he was mostly just moving, was that exactly by demand design to try to, you know, land that left hook and get him moving at him? Because, you know, obviously Haney cutting off the ring's not his forte, you know, and we know that he does have limited power. So I think some of it was by design, but it's not like I didn't think it was this flashy footwork where he kept pot-shotting him. He wasn't winning most of those rounds, is my point. When he was doing that, he wasn't winning a lot of those rounds. So I don't know if that was 100% by design or if he was trying to be like, I don't want to get into this back and forth too much because I got a little tired when I was trying to take him out. Maybe I'm going to try to reserve. On the flip side of that, you know, we could say reserving, throwing punches, sure, not throwing punches as much, but, you know, moving does get you tired too. So I don't know. But either way, you know, Derek James, like I said, a couple times in this fight was really, you know, earning his keep in the corner. And this was a big one for him. And, you know, a lot of people during camp, they'd, you know, show James while Garcia's doing something for the camera, you know, doing something for an Instagram post or whatever. He was just kind of sitting there like almost numb, you know. And the thing is, I didn't ever expect, like, Derek James to leave the camp. You know what I mean? A lot of people are like, I'd just leave. It's like, yeah, but, you know, you took the fighter on. You, in a sense, not to this level, but in a sense you knew what you were getting into. It did seem like he took it, you know, a different notch this time. But in the end, man, you know, it's just a great win. And like I said, we can talk about the weight all we want. That's fine. But it doesn't take away from it. It really doesn't for me. He's already talking about how, you know, his next fight will be welterweight, and if him and Tank were ever to... And by the way, that Tank rematch now is back on the table. If it's 2 years or 3 years from now or next year, you know, who knows? I'm just saying it's back on the table. You don't do that kind of pay-per-view number, and then he gets that kind of win. You know, in the gate, we don't know the final numbers, but the gate was healthy. They could have probably sold a little more tickets, right? Because they did overprice the thing. But either way, the gate was healthy. Now we're going to find out, you know, did the pay-per-view numbers really bulk up? Was it, you know, how many people actually went and, you know, actually bought this thing? We were talking last week how, you know, is it 300,000, 400,000? Did it eclipse 500,000? Did it go higher than that? Some people were saying it's going to do 800,000, a million. I didn't see a million. I didn't think 800,000, but some of those other numbers, you know, were definitely on the table. But, man, and now 147 beyond Boots, who still needs to be tested, of course, but it's a lot more open than it just was, you know. There's not too many quote-unquote killers up there now, you know. But overall, this was a weird, sloppy fight. If you look at the copy box, total punches thrown, 285 from Garcia, 214. 214 over 12 rounds is really, really not much. And honestly, either is 285, you know. But they both landed at a high percentage, so they made their shots counted, almost 41% for Haney and 37 there. So 106 to 87. You know, Haney definitely was working the body, 35 to 17. And then the jabs, of course, we figured he'd have the jab advantage. But he only threw 85 of them. And, you know, Ryan Garcia was kind of measuring and keeping his arm out there. He got warned a couple times. He was kind of measuring him with the jab. He didn't land a ton of them, but I think he did just enough with that. Most of his stuff, I mean, you look at it, 106 lands, 95 of them were power shots, and that's, you know, that's where it was, right? So, you know, like I said, I've heard a lot of stuff, you know, about the weight. But the thing about the weight is, you know, at the end of the week on Friday, when we heard that he was 3 pounds over, most people started putting money on the knockout for Haney. And I'm not ripping anybody. Like I said, I had money on both sides. I thought Haney would win by decision. I thought there was a chance he could win by TKO just because of preparation on the other side. And if he's 3 pounds over, you're like, dude, and like I said, even 3 pounds over, when he you know, posted that picture in the car, his face looked bad. His lips looked dry. He looked bad, dude. He did not look healthy. So a lot of people, like John and I, I'm about to bring in John. I see you pop in there. You know, we talked about we really got to see how this week goes. We got to see the weigh-in and all that. So, you know, we got to – I think people – you know, John and I have been talking about this for a while with the betting, and so many people bet now, like legally. And so the casual fan bets even more than they used to and whatnot. And I think people are mad at losing money, you know, more. And so they make a mountain out of a molehill. You know what I mean? Like I said, I didn't see too many people say, oh, that was smart of Garcia not to go down to 40 because he would have been dead. Now, when I saw the picture of Garcia, I was like, yeah, that probably was smart, but it didn't make me think, oh, he's going to win now, dude. Now, if he would have looked healthy and he didn't go down, maybe I'd, you know, think that. But even before the weigh-in last Tuesday when we were talking, you know, those plus 800-something, I think it was plus 865 for a knockout for Garcia, and plus 1130, whatever it was, for a decision. It was just too wide. So, like I said, I didn't make a fortune off it. That, you know, I wish I would have put more money on Garcia winning by decision. I just put a little bit just because I disagreed with the odds. I didn't think they should be that high, but I'd be lying if I told you I put $500 on it or something, you know. You give me plus 1156 or whatever it was, I'd be sitting pretty, but I didn't do it, you know. So, I don't know. I mean, it is what it is. You can go back through the history of boxing, and especially in recent history. And, you know, are we going to take Manny Pacquiao's win over Cotto away? Margarito had no business going any lower than 154. He was a huge dude. Should we take that? Then we got to take that fight away. We got to take a lot of fights away then if we're going to do this weight thing. You know, once you agree to it, you got to do it. And like I said, I saw most people becoming more confident. They were already confident that, you know, Haney was going to win. And I'm not ripping those people because I thought he was going to win. But it felt like, you know, logic tells you that, hey, okay, he didn't really take this kick. Because it's not like he's been at 140 for years or something. So, you know, I don't know. I'll shut up. I'll talk a little later. I'm going to go ahead and bring in John into the fold. What's going on, John? How the hell are you doing on this Monday night instead of Tuesday night after, you know, what turned out to be a great crazy fight with Ryan Garcia pulling the upset, man?
Yeah, feeling great, Chris. And, yeah, a lot of talk and, you know, really overall in a good way. It's got people interested for all kinds of reasons. And I found myself thinking over the last 2 days, and you already made a lot of good points, some of the things that I was thinking about. This fight in particular really has a lot to break down, and it seems like some of the smarter fans and commentators are kind of getting that. You know, there's even with what just happened and then moving forward, there's really a lot to break down. That's why I've been thinking about that since Saturday night. And as you mentioned, it's only Monday instead of Tuesday when we go on most of the times, but there's a lot to talk about, so it's good to get right to it. First, how my own thought process went, because it fits exactly with what you're talking about, and there's a good analysis of it. So when we did the show last week, I think my instinct was right. Let's wait until the weigh-in on this one. Really, that's more so even, believe it or not, with heavyweights, because they don't have to make weight, so you can kind of see what the conditioning level is a lot
right.
of times when they weigh in. You know, when there's the lower weights, you have a set weight you got to make. So, you know, in theory, and in most fighters are going to have to make that weight. So you're just kind of looking to see if they have difficulty in making it. Maybe have to take a couple tries on the scale or something like that, or not looking good and hitting it, you know, exactly out of those, you know, like they can't even get a quarter of a pound under or something like that. And also in a case, which we had here, you know, my analysis was, and I said it when we talked about it, I think I'd probably posted on X about it a few times. When the fight was signed, I feel like my initial instinct about this fight was good. When the fight was signed, you know, odds-wise, I just, you know, these guys were 3-3 in the amateurs. Garcia's only loss was to Tank. I was just like, these odds are just way too wide. I really, in my own mind, was just debating who I thought was going to win this one. But then as we got closer, you know, we had the behavior by Garcia. And so the first part of my analysis there was I took that even more seriously and not, as some people were saying, you know, could he be trolling and things like that. I didn't really, in my own analysis, want to go there because, as you and I had talked, the man himself a few years ago had taken time off and said he was having mental health difficulties. So, you know, I think we've learned in all aspects of life in a good way to take the mental health more seriously, be more understanding of it. And I think especially when you're looking at boxing, where fighters get hit in the head literally as part of their trade, your brain's getting rattled around, you know, we really can't ignore those kind of things. So as I'm seeing his behavior coming up to the fight, and I'm going to still wait to the weigh-in because I felt good about him ability-wise, and I thought, well, if he's in shape, if he shows me he's in shape, then, you know, maybe the behavior was a little odd, but could still pick him. That's why I didn't make a pick when we were on Tuesday. But then as you correctly broke down and not running from it at all, you know, then I saw he comes in 3.2 pounds over the weight. So my analysis, you know, with the lower weight fighters, you have to watch that sometimes, as has been a lot of discussion afterward. But, you know, I've discussed this before other fights, and this is what's tricky about even when you wait to the weigh-in, and then you get extra information like that, but you got to make a call. You don't know at that point, did the fighter who's not making the weight just train just as hard but decide to eat and be stronger and say, I'm not going to bother making this weight. I'm going to fight at a higher weight from here on out, where then they do get some advantage in that situation. If the other fighter really has trouble making that the weight and has to drain, or is it a case like we see a lot of times where the fighter just didn't train hard enough, they're not in shape, and they're just coming in out of shape, totally unprepared, just going to get a payday? I thought with all Garcia's behavior up to that point, the logical conclusion was that he's just not ready. And as you correctly pointed out, Chris, we have to look at the odds makers are the collective wisdom. And even though you have all different people putting it on, I say it a lot because it is important, if you read the actual science of prediction, the collective wisdom is still better than anybody who doesn't have special information. Like, in other words, if you don't have special information, what's going on inside the camp or something like that, the collective wisdom is better than you. So as you correctly pointed out, Chris, which I didn't hear people talking, and I think they should have, after the weigh-in, Heaney became an even bigger favorite, and the odds of him KOing Garcia went from plus 125 to minus 125. So the most likely result, according to the odds makers and the collective wisdom, after the weigh-in was Heaney by KO. And that's what I thought, because I thought the logical conclusion with the behavior combined with Garcia's weight was that he's not ready. And, you know, I can't even say those were crazy theories at that point. You know, you had like Algieri's, a pretty knowledgeable, you know, former fighter. he picked DQ Haney by DQ, that Garcia was just going to look to get out of there. Buddy McGirt said he should. I mean, there's not many people whose knowledge I respect more than Buddy McGirt, and he said Garcia should even be fighting at that point, around that point. So,
right.
You know, these are not people who don't know anything, and really didn't have a specific agenda at that point that I'm aware of. So, I thought myself, I wasn't, you know, I don't really respect Haney's power, so that was weird for me. But I thought the same type of thing, like we were talking, you know, there were knowledgeable people. I thought they were too hard on him. I think I was right about that, that said Garcia just quit against Tank, so you had that factor. So then I thought, well, at this point, I got to go Haney KO. On a personal level, I got lucky that I didn't make any big profit or anything like that, but I did leave a little money on that Garcia decision. Then when I went with the Haney KO,
yeah.
And I ended up coming up on just very slight plus, very slight plus.
It was too hard not to do something, you know?
Yeah, but it is a reminder how sometimes if you really look deep and you can do it. So that was what led me to where I was at. Now, what I think we know now, the way he fought was, and this is what's causing some controversy. This, to me, is the only legit issue. I basically agree with you, Chris. Too many people are talking about the weight. So let's talk about the part that I agree with you that I discount. I mean, the idea that because and there's people, you know, promulgating this theory out there, a lot of them, you know, the idea that Garcia, and I think you're right, gambling is involved with everybody can legally bet now pretty much in the U.S. or most people. A lot of people, I think they get mad. They do have money on it. You know, the idea that Garcia won this fight because he was 3.2 pounds heavier is absurd, because even in this era of too many weight classes, 17, which to me is ridiculous, and this kind of stuff shines a light on that even more, but let's look at it this way. So so we're saying that, like for example, if Haney weighed 136 and Garcia weighed 139.2, they would have both been under the junior welterweight limit, and Garcia's winning a fight when they're both in the same weight class. So, you know, it's that's ridiculous. Throw that out. Anybody, and you're totally on the wrong path if you think 3.2 pounds in weight made any difference in this result. But now what we have to see, I think, going down the road is, you know, it does look like Garcia pulled one of those things where he said, I'm not going to make the weight. I'm going to come in stronger, because he was obviously in shape. I mean, you can look at his speed and see he was in shape. That's what really caught
my
eye.
Very true.
You look at how fast he was.
And remember, you talked about that running and jogging. That plays into it too, you know?
Sure. He was – exactly, Chris. What the combo now, you know, you had to see the way he performed and the result. But you know what combo now he was doing was, because that running turned out to be real, I think, the way he fought, and he was fast. So what he was really doing was he was training hard and he was eating. Like, he didn't have to, you know, he just said, I'm not going to bother making, you know, 140. I'm going to train hard and I'm going to eat. I mean, that's, you know, relatively speaking for the fighters with cutting weight. And another good point you made, which was a positive clue for Garcia, but you just were looking at all the other negatives that you didn't want to put too much weight on it. But I think that did end up being a positive clue in hindsight, was Derek James stuck with him. Now, we know, you know, this is a big money fight. He's getting paid, but still, we've seen plenty of trainers where, you know, something like this, it was going bad, leave the camp or not work with the guy anymore. I mean, that's certainly very common, and especially with the kind of antics going on. But James stuck with it. Paid off huge for him. He's now back where he was, training Garcia to this type of a performance. But in hindsight, that was a clue. James stuck with him. So, you know, looking from the outside, as we were going in, we may have drawn a little bit of a wrong conclusion there, that maybe we could have saw, like, Derek James is this respected trainer, was just recently trainer of the year. Why is he with him all the way through if the guy's supposedly off the wall, you know, not training, just, you know, not in shape and all that kind of stuff. And we're supposed to believe James was with him every day during this. So almost all of us might have missed a clue there that James stayed in there. And I did laugh. I think it was Jevin Bay posted this morning, which is a good point, because these guys get credit when it goes their way, and then you don't hear about it when it doesn't. He said, what happened to Davison and Lee Wiley's film study with Haney? You know, getting ready for the left hook of Garcia. And I did have to chuckle. All of a sudden, they weren't the big, great consultants in this one. Good for James. But getting back to the point, so going in, Garcia, I didn't think the combination of Garcia's behavior and then that high weight meant he was, you know, kind of playing it. You don't want to say savvy, because you still don't really like the guy doing it, but I don't care that these alphabet belts to me are meaningless. So I think that shows you that they're not that important. But, you know, he obviously really did plan that out. Now, so what we got to see going forward was, you know, this is where you would look if Haney bounces back or not, or how Garcia performs in the future. Did Garcia gain a significant advantage because he knew he wasn't going to make the weight? In other words, in terms of strength, not the 3.2 pounds, the mere fact that he didn't have to drain. And Haney, you know, there were some rumors he had been getting heavy, and if he did have to drain down to that 140. But I don't think this was just because of that. Garcia looked much bigger in there. That's maybe something we should have known before the fight. Because he definitely looked like the bigger, stronger guy. He looked like the faster guy in there, too. That some people mentioned it, but not enough. I mean, you know, look, just because Haney had the reputation as pure boxer, he did not look like the faster guy in there Saturday night. So being lighter didn't make him faster, which you would think it normally would. Or Garcia looked like the faster guy. I mean, you know, in that one knockdown, I mean, that wasn't just a big left hook, but that was a beautiful combination. I mean, I'm talking about with speed. Yeah, I think that was, you know, that kind of thing from the fight really, really stood out. Another thing that I think we got to break down, Chris, is, you know, kind of like the Joshua Andy Ruiz one. We've seen this in other fights in boxing history too. It's hard to tell when it's happened, but, you know, concussion is a brain injury by definition, and you don't know what's happening after that. In other words, did Haney just, when he got hurt early the first time, was he never the same after that the rest of the fight? I mean, Garcia did that to him, but was it one of those cases as well? He didn't look to be, you know, Garcia can hit, but Haney just didn't look to be taking the shots all that well. But then that's another thing to break down. You know, when he got hurt against Linares, I was even thinking that might have been overrated. But even though Garcia is a puncher, you look at the way Haney responded here, didn't look too good. But then the other side of the coin, he just fought Progray, who's a legit good puncher, maybe past his best. But still, no doubt the guy can punch, and he didn't have any problems in that fight. So but Haney didn't show any power. He didn't. Garcia did say he hurt him once, but generally he really looks underpowered as a puncher. That keeps coming up career, so that's a question. But we got to see, was he at a little bit of a disadvantage because he was more drained? Did he get hurt early and couldn't respond? Or, you know, is he just too underpowered, especially as he's going up in weight, where that's going to keep being a problem for him? I think those are the questions. Garcia seems to be, you know, at least for this one, back on track. Looks to have good size, at least to match up against some people at welterweight, which I figure he probably will fight there. And, you know, as some even really old school characters that have even been watching it longer than us, Chris, I give him credit. Like, I saw Pedro Fernandez, who was always a great writer for Flash and Boxing Update, and broadcasted on a lot of different cable stuff and everything. He was one of the guys that was saying Garcia quit in the Tank fight, and he boxed amateur in the amateurs as well, but he was saying this, which I think he's right. Look, you know, with Garcia with this following, you want to get a younger fan base into boxing, it's really a huge win. just for the sport, Garcia getting that win, you know, with that Instagram following. And I'm just being anecdotal here because it's hard to tell and you're not measuring the data, but boy, there did seem to be a lot of social media talk about Garcia after the fight, like just a real lot. And that's where I think you kind of feel that kind of thing. I'm like, man, there's a lot of talk about this guy after the fight, even more than I would have thought, even with this huge win. So I keep saying it lately, really in these last few months, but I am seeing some things to be optimistic about. I don't see the mainstream talk yet like you'd like to see, but I do feel within its lane, boxing seems to be getting stronger, and where it might spread out some with, you know, like Garcia getting this win. And then Tank is a peripheral winner because he knocked out Garcia, and then Garcia had this big performance, and, you know, Tank's popular, so he benefits indirectly, I think. There's just, you know, you got a Canelo fight coming up in a couple weeks. ESPN keeps putting on these shows that are non-pay-per-view that have fighters that are interesting enough and interesting enough matchups. And then you've got, you know, Turk Alashik just putting all these fights together. More coming out just within the last couple hours. You know, I got to mention it because I'm really surprised. I think it's a super high risk. Apparently, you know, Pitbull Isaac Cruz is going to fight Jose Valenzuela at 140. I think that's a big risk. That's a bad style matchup for him because that is a guy that's tall. I was talking, I didn't know if Raleigh met the criteria, but Valenzuela does, and he can punch. So I'm not saying I have a pick yet, but that to me is extremely high risk for Isaac Cruz while he's riding high. I'm sure Turk Alashik is arranging for these guys to be well paid, but that seems high risk to me. And Andy Ruiz is going to be on there fighting Big Baby Miller. So that keeps helping because fights are, that we wouldn't have, or like we keep saying, are getting put together. But this Garcia win was big because of his following. It was still a huge upset looking at the odds itself, but he did prove that with one loss, with his talent level, he's certainly not out of things. Now, Haney's got to do that, but I think we got to look at Haney too. Some people have pointed it out. I agree. I was thinking the same. You know, he did take damage in this fight. You know, it's not that you can't bounce back from one loss, but, you know, when you're getting dropped like that, I mean, your brain is not quite the same. So, you know, he may just bounce back strong, but, you know, he could have taken some damage here. He definitely took some damage, but, you know, how will it affect him going forward? A lot of questions out there, but it definitely was a big night that left us with a lot to talk about.
Yeah, and we'll see, you know, exactly, like you said, if those opponents are the exact opponents or not. You know, we do tend to get a lot of reports. And
right.
Sometimes half the report is correct. He is fighting that night, you know.
Yeah.
But we don't know, you know, exactly. I suppose we know it sounds pretty concrete about Terrence Crawford that night.
Yeah.
But, yeah, as far as, you know, is Ruiz or whoever is fighting that night, we'll see if, in fact, that is. You wonder, like, I just kind of assumed it would be Barroso. The date is the date that they've been talking about, though, recently for Pitbull, so
that's high risk. Yeah, that's really high risk. I mean, I give him credit if he takes it, but that's high risk. I mean, I want to see that fight. I'll say that right off. I mean, they're going to put that on there. I'm not sure why.
That's the best fight of the night.
Yeah, me too. That's what I was just going to say. I'm not sure, even though
by a far margin, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, even though I do respect, you know, Madrimov's talent, I'm not sure why Turki Alashik wants to give us that fight. I mean, it's still a good fight, but, like, if you got Terrence Crawford involved and you're going to put out the money I assume he's putting out, you know, give us something else, but I would think. But, you know, I did have to laugh because And now on this, there's a lot of, it's just bizarre because now a lot of PBC guys are obviously going to be on this card. And I just did have to laugh a little myself, just showing how you never know what's going to happen. You know, I did post this on X a day or two ago. I mean, what we do have to just say it though. Who would have ever thought that Eddie Hearn would be promoting Deontay Wilder, Terrence Crawford, and Boots Ennis? I mean, it's just boxing can always be the theater of the unexpected.
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. And you know, it's funny because a chunk of years ago, I guess it wouldn't have been the most shocking thing in some sense, because when he first came over here, you know, he had DeGale and Badu Jack, and you know, it felt like he was going to be one of the promoters he'd go to, and you know, with Anthony Joshua and Matchroom, really Anthony Joshua, you know, lining up a Showtime there for a second, and
that's
so there was actually, you know what I mean, there was a little cross there, and then DAZN came into the picture. You know, and then
yeah,
it was like completely opposite.
Yep.
Yep. Then it was completely opposite. And then all of a sudden it was like, you know, basically the exact opposite of what he's saying now is he wants to work with everyone. Before he was saying, if you want to be, you know, like at the middleweight division, if you want to be, you know, if you want to get a big fight, you got to be a DAZN fighter. Well, those times are gone. And, you know, a lot of the stuff that's happening, we know that the in-house fights are still the most important because you have to make them because
right.
you have a deal. But it, you know, the cross, you know, we've gotten more than people think or give credit for. We've definitely had plenty of them go to the wayside as well. We can't forget about that. But, you know, with this new investment, and it's not an investment from a network.
And it
does have something to do with the promoters, John, but not really. You know what I mean? It's actually the fighters. He wants to talk to the fighter. If you want to bring your manager in here, cool. But let's get you squared away so you're comfortable, and then we'll sign you for three fights, and then we'll figure out the rest. You know what I mean? And the promoters have come together, and now it does seem like Turkey realizes doing every single one in Saudi is just not going to work for revenue whatsoever. And
yeah,
when you start
to moving out of Saudi Arabia now to LA,
yeah, which is pretty crazy. And but
it's
even
crazy,
before that, I think what a week ago or 2 weeks ago we talked about how they're thinking about already doing a 5-for-5 at Wembley, you know, or at least in the UK, in England. So that was like, when that happened, it kind of piqued my interest, like, oh, wait, what was that? Okay, because this is still marketing. You know, this is still branding. You know, it's
right.
just a different version of it, and it's probably a more effective version. And it's definitely going to bring you more revenue when you actually get the fighters fighting where they belong to fight. And nothing against
right.
Saudi. Some of the events go there, some of them don't. You know, I mean, there's no way, like we've said the whole time, but Turbiev and Bafal wasn't going to make a whole lot of money here, you know? So why not?
Right.
That's awesome. You know, that's fine. And actually, the hours line up pretty good for boxing fans here. Now, they may not line up good for, you know, pay-per-views, but they do line up. And, of course, that's not a pay-per-view anyway, but it is kind of interesting. Once I heard that, I thought, well, what's stopping them from coming here then, you know, and doing basically what networks do and what even the PBC does, where they fund it, they use a promoter and go from there. And so, you know, to have a what appears like cross-promotional stuff going on with Eddie Hearn as the you know, because he does have Majerimov, and he does have probably some other fighters on there, but just in general, you know, someone's got to promote the show. The PBC can't do it. You know, they need a promoter. I mean, not to say TGB's done a great job. I'm just saying someone's, you know, by law has to do it. So why not? You know, and it's about freaking time that something like this happens. So, You know, yeah, it is. It's crazy. But, yeah, I mean, now that night of fights, I don't know how good it's going to be. When I hear, you know, Abner Mares, I really liked him. I loved how he brawled. I love how he worked the body. Now, sometimes he went, you know, too low on the body shots. But I liked how he could box, too. At 126, he showed some of his boxing skills. I really loved following his career. But for me, or for most people, I'm not saying anything out of left field or anything. It's over. It's done. And
yeah.
So I'm not really – I know Leo Santa Cruz has been out of the ring a lot. Okay, sure. But I don't like that fight whatsoever.
No.
Ruiz has been out of the ring a lot, fighting Miller. You know, that one at least lines up because at least we've seen Miller of late, I guess. And he has been out of the ring so long. And, you know, when he's been in the ring, quite frankly, he hasn't looked all that good, Rui. So it's like, okay, well, that's not the worst fight. The Crawford fight, kind of interesting because, and that's why we talked about last week, too, about there is some rumors brewing that Saudi Money and Crawford are matching up. And then all of a sudden, now you think, well, maybe the boots fight could happen if Saudi was involved. But it is kind of, I don't know, I'm kind of torn because I like the fight at 154. I think dude's a good fighter. But when I hear him say, well, I don't want to fight this guy, I don't want to fight that guy, I don't want to fight that guy, I'm only looking for big fights. It's like, well, you meant you're only looking for big money and not just big fights. Because this is a good fight going up to 54. He's got a belt. It sounds like they may finagle it to be a, you know, by fight night, John, it'll probably be a unification, you know, it'll probably be a unification because WBO is already getting in there for interim, which once they make a decision, you know, because remember, they were supposed to start negotiations with the winner of that fight, the Fundora Sue. So I'm sure they'll finagle it somehow, but, I'm not saying that's a bad fight to go for your first fight at 154. I don't have a problem with it whatsoever. I think it's fine, and at least he's active to where the next opportunity to come, and it's not going to be that much longer out of the ring. But it's not just the big name. The big name comes with the money. Well, he's definitely not, you know, a big name who he's fighting, but the money's there with Saudi, which takes care of it.
Right. That's why it's happening. But apparently Turki Alashik says he wants to put together Boots and Crawford as well. So he's got something in mind there. But, yeah, this is all for the entertainment level. It's all coming together good. But, yeah, I saw it too. I don't want to see Maris fighting Santa Cruz again. Their first fight was a great fight, but that was, you know, many years ago now in the early days of PBC, ESPN fight. I thought that was a really good one for ESPN. That's why I remember that. But, you know, that's long ago now, and Morris has had the eye problems. And, you know, he's the regular commentator, you know, was with Show, and now with, you know, Prime. I just, you know, again, we don't make the life decisions for him, but it's a head-scratcher. You know, when he's got a broadcasting gig and he's had the eye, and you know, to keep going forward doesn't seem to make much sense. But it's good now. You know, you've got now some different things going. You still got PBC doing their thing, and you've got, you know, Turki Alashik making fights that wouldn't have been made by throwing money around, and then you've got Top Rank on ESPN, ESPN Plus, doing a really good job of showing things that aren't pay-per-view. You know, I don't see where the DAZN thing really fits in the U.S., but then you got, like, Garcia, he's got that social media following, so, you know, he breaks through anyway, and then Munguia's got this opportunity with Canelo, where if he pulls the upset, he's going to break through just because of getting that platform. So even that part might work out for you know, De La Hoya and Hearn in terms of having all these fighters on DAZN in the U.S. But I think Hearn benefits somewhat too. Like you said, Chris, you know, he's just kind of there. Yes, maybe in these fights where Turki Alashik is bringing the money. But Hearn's a good front man. And even though it's on some of his promotional stuff, but you look at it, you see him now, like, you know, he's promoting a fight in Mexico, and you see him walking down the street and people knowing who he is and running up to him. I mean, it's kind of that kind of stuff. You know, I'm not saying he's known outside the boxing world, but he's good at doing that front man stuff. You know, he's good at talking. He's good,
yeah.
good at doing that front man stuff. And what I just say, and I said this before about Hearn, and I'm just saying it because of that part of his personality. Like, you know, Dana White's the front man of UFC, you know, like, I mean, you know, he was one of the guys that helped get it going with the Fertitta brothers, but it's just like, you know, that like worked with him being like a front man guy. And, you know, Hearn's kind of has potential as that kind of guy. I've said it before. And now that he's getting involved, you know, in more American stuff, like, you know, now with the Saudi money now coming into the U.S. and even Hearn's there, he can kind of keep building that front man persona. And he kind of has a little bit of his own value like that. I mean, it's not that you're like watching the fight only because Eddie Hearn's there, but it is one of those like peripheral beneficial type things that, oh, it's Hearn, you know, he's that talker front man guy, and he adds to the entertainment factor, you know, one of those types of things. Like you said, they do a five against five in Wembley with Hearn, you know, and Warren there and Hearn doing his thing. I mean, you know, a lot of potential for Hearn to do the front man thing.
Yeah. And just, to your point about ESPN Plus, they put out that, you know, Top Rank Boxing on Twitter, put that out the next 2 months, May 6th, Inoue Neri, Loma Kambosos, Fury Usyk, Navarrete Brancic, Taylor Catterall 2, Paterbia Bivel, and then Zayas and Teixeira. So it is a nice run. And I did see, you know, how you said only one of those, you know, really only one of those are pay-per-view. So, and, you know, it's a big one. You know, it's a huge
right.
one. So, you know, that's a quality fight on pay-per-view. So, and as we know, you know, it's got some interesting stuff on the undercard. And the other one, you know, another, you know, major fight at 175. Finally, after like 5-6 years, we get that undisputed. And it's got a weird pay-per-view undercard, but if they had that on pay-per-view, I don't think too many people would have been freaking out either way, but it is nice that it's on ESPN Plus. And so, yeah, they've, you know, something we've been talking about for quite a while, this ESPN Plus combination ever since they started to make it. You don't have to have cable to watch it. That I think that really helps. And also, they get a lot of fights from Japan and just overseas in general in the UK, and Saudi, that, you know, definitely helps that. Now, I have heard the rumblings of, I think it's like TNT Sports or whatever they're calling it now. Either way, where Queensberry and Frank Warren are, there's some rumors that, you know, when that deal's up, that they may go to DAZN there, or that maybe DAZN starts picking up. So instead of it being on ESPN Plus, they would do a deal with DAZN here. Whether that's just going to be in the UK or whether that's DAZN worldwide or whatever, or maybe that won't even happen. Part of the negotiation process for ESPN, you know, to keep this with Top Rank, for Top Rank to keep the deal, you'd assume that would be a big part of it because that's been their bread and butter. And they kind of go through ups and downs. Some really quality stuff that kind of lines up. Sometimes it doesn't line up the way we'd like it, especially at the heavyweights. But you're always going to have ups and downs in certain fight cards. Like this weekend, Golden Boy's had a good year. This weekend, there's really not much interest in the card, but hopefully that leads to bigger fights for both, you know, Ortiz and Ramirez and whatnot. But that'll be interesting, and, you know, hopefully it's not a case of, you know, like we said last year, Showtime had a great year, and then, you know, just it didn't go through. And so hopefully they're not, it's not too late that, you know, ESPN, or I should say Top Rank, is doing this good of a job late in the deal where it's like,
right.
Well, man, had you applied this pretty much the whole time. But, you know, it is what it is. We'll see. Hopefully they can, you know, work that deal. It'll be a little different, I assume. I mean, it already is different based off after COVID. They don't do as many dates as the press release originally said. But it has been big, no doubt about it. Any other items? How did you score the fight, by the way, as far as round by round? Because it was 112-112, and then 114-110, and 115-109, I believe. You know, there was that, what round was that where, you know, the seventh round, I saw some folks saying it was such a one-sided round that you could have already 10-8 it even if there wasn't a knockdown, which would make it with a knockdown a 10-7, and then obviously, you know, the point deduction was in there, so that would bring back Haney a point and whatnot. But how did you score round by round, you know, on on your scorecard watching it from Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, I just didn't, you know, I didn't see any case for Haney winning the fight or you know, getting a draw. But you made a good point about the, you know, we probably with the 10-8, with the 10-point must system to be used properly.
We literally just
talked
about
this last
week.
Yeah.
Yep.
This is a good example of it. The more I think about it, we're really messing up scoring by not doing that. It's actually an underrated issue because a razor thin round shouldn't be 10-9 for one guy where you don't really barely know which way to go, and then another round where a guy hurts somebody and knocks him around the ring most of the round, but he doesn't get a knockdown. That scored the same way, and you've got cards doing that all the time. So I think it's good for those points to keep being brought up. But, you know, I think like you pointed out with the punches, Chris, with there not being that much difference. And, you know, it's not that it's a perfect at all times, but I think even after this win, you know, people are still underestimating Garcia's boxing ability a bit. Again, he's got the amateur pedigree. You know, I mean, he was 3-3 with Haney in the amateurs, where, you know, you're not as focused on power punching. Yeah, I know it's the amateurs, but you know, he can box with the guy. You know, not that Haney's not a good boxer, and you know, you can't make the case for him being the better boxer. But I think, you know, Garcia was faster in there Saturday night, so.
And he can, you know, still use his jab more. You know, I still think he's leaving it on the table a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with you. He can work off of that more. But you know, I just didn't really see any case for Haney getting a draw or, you know, winning the fight or getting a draw. So, and I thought that was, you know, closer than it should have been. It just felt like a clear Garcia win for me. And you know, I think he was fighting too. Like, you know, you can get that with any fighter, really. A lot of times, you know, in a fight where they know they can hurt the guy early, they've shown that, had him in trouble, and they can see if the punches are having an effect on him. Then sometimes the volume's sometimes not there like it would have been if you're in a situation where you're like, oh, I'm not hurting this guy, I got to outpoint him. You know, going to have to let some more stuff go, even if it's softer. I mean, I just, you know, think Garcia, you know, in that sense, got in control early where, you know, again, even though Haney did land the one decent shot early that Garcia did say hurt him a bit, still, you know, Garcia was the bigger, more powerful guy in there. And he even looked like the faster guy. So I think, you know, he looked pretty confident the whole way, and you know, I think he felt like he had some control. So I guess what I'm saying is, you know, maybe if he wasn't hurting him as much as he was, he could have even picked it up a little more, and if he had to, but didn't quite feel he needed to. But I just didn't see any case for Haney, you know, getting a draw or you know, somebody even somehow scoring a fight with him. And like you said, it might be betting motivated, but there were some people that seemed like they even wanted to gripe there and just say, well, Garcia got the knockdowns, but Haney did everything else. I don't know why he you know, he didn't get better on the scorecards. And
right.
I'm thinking like you are. You know, this guy just took a hit on DraftKings or FanDuel, you know, with his bet on Haney. He's having a little trouble.
Yeah.
He's having a little trouble coping.
Yeah, because like you said, in a lot of the rounds, there wasn't a whole lot of action per se. And so you had to – there's times where, yeah, Garcia was moving a lot and not being effective. And you know, a jab to the head and the stomach and a right hand to the stomach and all that, sometimes to the head by Haney. He was trying to come forward. That's not his forte per se. But then, you know, not every round, but, you know, there was a good 4 or 5 in a row, but maybe one in there, you know, there was a big uppercut or a right hand or a left hook, like the fourth round, I thought could have went either way instead of just completely from rounds 2 to 6. Those are all Haney rounds. Just give them to him.
Right.
Not necessarily. You know what I mean? So
exactly.
Yeah. I thought, I'll tell you what, Haney showed a lot of heart getting up because,
yeah.
Although he think
hurt bad.
I think he did recoup pretty well after that first getting buzzed. Considering it seemed like, John, every knockdown got worse, you know, last one with the left hook up close. I mean, his neck, you know, did the twist and went right down. It was like, oh boy, you know, that's not looking good. That other one where he's like, kind of had his back turned. He's on his knees and he's like, and you're like, uh-oh, hold on. Is he going to get up here? And, you know, to his credit, he definitely got up and he showed a lot. And that was one thing, even though Progray had 2 fights with Kambosos, couldn't really do much. That left hook, the left hand in general, is there on Haney. He does lean in when he jabs sometimes. Someone broke this down, Boxing's Gym on YouTube. I like to shout out him from time to time. You could see him pushing off his back foot even more. And sometimes, even if it's like a lead right hand or whatever, it's not always his jab. But sometimes, man, he just leaves himself so open. And a lot of times he'll throw the jab and then just kind of duck down or, you know, so he's trying to keep his head off. But, you know, when you got someone with good timing and speed, like you said, you know, and is willing to sit there and either get hit or barely get hit or not even get hit. But then during an exchange, most of that happened during exchanges. So, and it just never thought, it never seemed like Haney got comfortable with the range, John. You know, he was timid. It was like, I want to get closer so I can land my stuff. But as the fight wore on, especially that, you know, back half, he was really getting clubbed, and it just like the 10th, the 11th, you could kind of see him just, it wasn't like you could see he was actually back enough to keep fighting and all that, but man, he just was timid, hesitant, couldn't quite figure out the range and like you said, the speed and whatnot, and if those guys were hitting him, you know, Joseph Diaz Jr., and Linares, you know, good fighters and whatnot, but with the speed and the real deal power, it's gonna be an issue. And you know, I think Haney might have to go to 147 as well because, you know, even at 140, he still looks like he, it's hard for him to make this weight. So, yeah, it's. I don't know. But, yeah, I could see Ryan Garcia being able to win fights at 147 with a lot of fighters now. You know, obviously the biggest matchup as far as who's there, Terrence Crawford is not going to fight at welterweight anymore. You know, obviously his boots and his. They're both at the zone now. Could they make that fight? Would they make that fight? I don't know. It's kind of interesting. But like you said, maybe the Saudis will invest, and it will be Crawford and Ennis. You know, who knows? You can never really tell. But any other items from that undercard, you know, I didn't think Barbosa won.
No.
I did like David Jimenez, I thought he was out boxing Scrappy Ramirez. He was taking it to him. He just beat him pretty much. Like, I think I gave Ramirez the first and the third, and that was it. David really looked good in that fight. What'd you think of Beck, you know, and obviously Conwell was back this weekend as well, so that was nice to see him. But what'd you think of Beck? Obviously, the fight, I think it was his left eye that was a pretty bad cut. Eighth round, I believe, was the stoppage. That was 79-73, two cards, 78-74. I wasn't too impressed with Beck, but, yeah, what'd you think of Barbosa?
Barbosa now, some people are saying after the fact, I've said this before, but Barbosa gets into some somewhat entertaining fights. He throws a lot of punches, but he doesn't have any pop, even for 140-pounder. You constantly see that with him, and he never really sparked my interest much because of that. We've talked about it. It's surprising the way Top Rank will – now, you know, he might have gone somewhat on his own, but still, I don't know how much Top Rank still wanted him. Surprising that they have guys that they've put a lot of ESPN exposure to, which has a value, and let him go. It seemed like maybe Barbosa was one of those guys that they lost some interest in. I'm not saying he's one of those guys they just released like some other guys, but I don't know if they were that worried about keeping him. Now he has a bad performance. It gets overstated, but this does seem to be one that everybody thought he lost. Like, you know, there didn't seem to be anybody saying they thought he won. So
yeah,
that's pretty bad. You know, he wasn't fighting a legit top 10 guy or anything. So I'm sure Top Rank's looking at that and saying, yeah, we're not too worried about not having Barbosa. He's cannon fodder. He was going to be cannon fodder, you know, for one of the better 140-pound guys at some point in a fight. I think that was just what we were waiting on. But, you know, now really his stock dropped even further because everybody thought he lost this fight. They'll probably still do that with him anyway, but he's definitely, you know, limited in upside because of the lack of power. And it's not like he's a spectacular boxer or anything like that. So he's just a limited guy, you know, with 17 weight classes, he was in the top 10 at 140, but you know, that is more of a, you know, product of the 17 weight classes than him being that good. So it seems like everybody's down on him now, and rightfully so, but I wasn't too high on him beforehand. Conwell, I like a lot. You know, there's things he does in there that I like. I mean, there's times he reminds you a little bit of a Dwight Muhammad Cowie at 154 pounds, just with his height and some of the things he does in the ring. I think he's been waiting for a big opportunity. I think he's a guy that is going to be better if he gets that big opportunity too. You know, he's been in these kind of lesser fights, and sure, you want to impress, but you know, he's had to bide his time with those, and he had the tragedy with Patrick Day. Patrick Day died after his fight with Conwell, of course, a few years ago. So I do feel like he's a guy, if he gets that big 154-pound fight, I think he's going to perform well, even though he's had some ups and downs. I like his talent level, and he is a guy I'd like to see get a shot at a bigger fight. So is that going to happen? Is somebody going to give him an opportunity for that? I don't know. Like you said, you've got this DAZN card with just terrible opponents this weekend. Ortiz, you know, against Delorme at this stage, that's awful. You know, and the other fights similar. So only just saying that, like, you know, let's get Conwell in with one of these better opponents. I mean, if they wanted to make him an Ortiz, I'd certainly be on board to watch that one.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, it was nice to see Conwell back. Brandon Adams as well got a nice, I think it was a body shot that he won by, so that was, we had a little upset on that overtime boxing as well, so.
Yeah, Adams picked up where he left off a few years ago, which is very hard to do.
Yep.
He was looking excellent before he took the 3-year layoff. And I'd like to see him, you know, he's fought at middleweight before. I'd actually like to see him fight at middleweight because it's so open, you know, 160.
Yeah.
Not that he was fighting at 154 as well, but I just seemed to me like there's an opening there. So I thought maybe he'd do that, but I think at either of those weights, 154, 160, since he showed he at least is close to where he left off, he's ready for a run. There's some openings there, especially if he does go back up to 160 pounds. So I'm glad to see the guy back with a win. I think he really was looking strong before he left off, and at least there's a chance he can pick that back up.
Yeah. And then when it comes to Bill Haney, right, what are your thoughts here on him? You know, he's been doing a good job promoting. Obviously, you know, there's some stuff where it's boxing, right? So sometimes there's some interviews where he, you know, everybody at some point's going to get on your nerves. You know what I mean? There's sometimes you're like, okay, Bill. But I thought he's done a good job in many ways, in and outside of the ring with Devin, of course. But as far as a head trainer, right, as far as the trainer that's, you know, right there in the ring and right there, like, is it time for him to step aside and bring in somebody else? Do you kind of foresee that? Because I sure do. A lot of people are talking about it. It's not like I said, it's not ripping Bill by any stretch, but you got a talented kid. Maybe you've just brought him as far as you can, and, you know, you got to tighten up that defense for the left hooks because this isn't the first time he's gotten hit, you know, over and over with the same punch. What are your thoughts there? Do you think that that's maybe the move they'll make? Not that he can't be, you know, in training camp with them and still being involved, but maybe just step aside as far as the role of a trainer.
There's a lot of times I think it in those situations, but then I'm getting a little wishy-washy on it because even though there's a lot of times I've thought it, then I see times where that you know, it gets back to just the father and you're like, well, maybe it wasn't that. Like, for example, you know, I'm right there with everybody else. You got Teofimo, he's got Gamache helping him for the Lomachenko, and then they want to save money. They don't have Gamache anymore. It's back just to another character, you know, his dad, and then the next thing you know, he's beating up Josh Taylor. I mean, it's like with his dad in the corner, just his dad, and like, you know, even though, and we'll see how he does against Canelo, but I'm not saying there's not some like improvements you can kind of see. He was with Morales for a while, now with the Roach, but like, to me, in terms of his overall effectiveness, like, Jaime Munguia, you know, came up with his father, got to contender status, you know, alphabet belt status with his dad, and then they brought in other guys, and I'm like, I don't know if he's any better. But then I think of Joey Spencer with his dad, and, you know, there's things I see in the corner where I'm like, you know, he needs to do something. He needs to do something else there, you know? Like, it just doesn't seem to me like his dad, you know, wants him to, you know, fight like he should. You know, he's got a body. You know, look, it's just, you know, and even with the fathers, some of them do it differently. But with Spencer's dad, it seems like, you know, he wants him to maybe box more than he should, you know, with what he's best at. And you just wonder if that's part of his dad being in there. So with that one, I looked at it in some of those recent fights. And then when he lost to Ramos, and I was like, yeah, he needs something else. But then I think of the Teofimo example, and I guess Cal Zaghi had his dad the whole way. But then Roy Jones, you know, he had his dad in the amateurs, and he just didn't want to do it with him anymore. And, you know, his dad apparently was always in his ear, even when he wasn't training him. But he didn't want to have him as the trainer anymore, and they had, I guess, some difficulties. So, you know, you see a lot of these different situations. I mean, I don't know. And then, like you said, Haney, you know, that's another mixed bag is, like, you get, like, Teofimo's dad and, you know, then you get Bill Haney. They are becoming part of the show, and it seems like a distraction, but there's another part of it, like the show, like I said about Hearn, like, but they're almost part of the show that helps market these guys. So, like,
that's true. You know, and Haney is more of a, I mean, he'll talk a little bit during interviews if you bring it out of him, but yeah, he's not over the top like that with the personality.
Right. But they just, like, still, they almost become like part of the marketing show. So,
right.
They might help. They might, in a funny way, help like that. So it's complicated. I don't know if he's got to, I don't know if he's got to make that change just after this loss. But there are a lot of questions with Devin Haney. I'm with everybody else who's saying he can come back. Yes, I think he can come back too. It is only one loss, but we just have to. But, you know, we don't know if it was because he was, you know, if it wasn't because he was drained, you know, then he got beat up bad by Garcia. I mean, there was, you know, some separation there, and he looked smaller in there, and he hasn't shown the power, and he took some damage. But then again, you know, it could be that he was drained, and that's maybe even led to why he was getting hurt a little more. And if he's not in a situation where he's at the disadvantage of being drained, he might pick up where he was before this fight, even with his dad in the corner. Hard to say at this point.
Yeah, because when we heard in his last fight that he, you know, the next day at the weigh-in in California, you know, it's like 20-25 pounds difference.
Right.
And we've seen guys make a run like that. But then it usually does catch up to him, you know, because it's hard to put that much weight on. It also is telling you that you probably shouldn't stay that long at the weight. And man, he probably stayed an extra handful of fights at 35 too long. So maybe that 47 will help him. So, yeah, he may still put on 17, 18 pounds, so maybe it's not such a big up and down because, you know, he's not – old, but he's definitely, you know, been around now for a while. He has a lot of fights, that's for sure, and a fair amount of them have gone the distance, so it's a lot of rounds, a lot of camps, so he probably will, and like we keep saying, 147 isn't as stacked as it used to be, so it's not like he would have to go up there and just take on Terrence Crawford right away or something like that, so there is maneuverability for him. You know, and of course, he still is the WBC champ. So maybe that plays into it as well, which is, you know, kind of funny how that works. I thought it was that, you know, of course, Ryan Garcia wasn't going to be able to win it. But I thought if you lose, it would just go vacant. What happened to that rule? That doesn't exist anymore.
It's just silly, and it's extra silly to me because Lopez is the man that beat the man in that division. So, you know, nobody like Haney should have had a belt in the first place in that division. I mean, we know how the alphabets operate. I get tired of getting lectured by not you, Chris, but these other people. Like, look, I know how they operate. That's not
right,
my point. I know how they do it. My point
is... Yeah, you're not saying he shouldn't have had one of the belts because, of course, Regis had it, blah, 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 but I know what you're saying.
Right. I'm just
if it was just one guy at the lineal, and that's what counted.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm always saying. That's what I always go on. So, you know, we want it to be the man who beat the man, and Taylor had it, and, you know, he got beat clearly by Lopez. So, you know, Haney wasn't a real champ, no matter what the WBC says. And now he just got dropped three times and lost, and WBC is still going to call him a champ. So it's, you know, typical. Typical alphabet absurdities coming into play, but we all know that's definitely nothing new in boxing.
Yeah, exactly. That's their forte. That's their main objective. Any other items? Thanks for stopping in on a Monday too. I appreciate that. But any other?
Nope,
items,
no problem. Sir? Good that we got to talk about a lot. So no, you just have not a good card this week with Ramirez, and the Ramirez fight isn't a good one, and you've got with Bartholomew, who has been in a lot of dull fights as well, and then you've got Ortiz against Delorme, who's long past it and doesn't take a good shot even when he was at his best. So not good. So just saying, nothing really to take anything from this weekend. But then we'll have the Canelo card, which is not a great undercard, except for the Stanionis Magestre is interesting, but Canelo Mungi is good. I'm pretty excited for that one. So we'll have that in a couple weeks.
All right, thanks a lot, Johnny. Have a good night, and we'll see you next week.
All right, Chris, have a good one.
All right, take it easy.
Take care.
All right, I'm going to bring in Carcino in just a second. I'm already getting messages, too, that our people are listening live. Listen, you have to see what he's saying, okay? He's not saying that Devin Haney shouldn't have been a titleist at. He's talking about having so many belts and, you know, the interim belts, too, and all the franchises and the supers and the, you know, he's talking about it overall, okay? He's not talking. He picked Haney to win this fight, so did I. So he's not talking that he didn't deserve a belt. Regis Progress had the belt. He took it from him. He knocked him down. He dominated him. That's not – you got to – if you're just listening right now to John, you're missing his point. He's talking about – when push comes to shove, it usually should come down to lineal. And if you don't have a lineal at a division, then you go off resume until that lineal is established. And, of course, you know, even at the ring, right, you can have a lineal championship that doesn't line up. They'll try. Shit, they just tried one against four, Bam against Sonny. They tried to do one against four instead of one against two. One against three was like an injury thing or like, if the two really showed that he didn't want the fight or is about to leave the weight class or something, once in a while they'll do a one against three. Sometimes it's not legit. Sometimes it is. But he doesn't mean Devin Haney wasn't worthy of a title. He scored Haney over Loma, okay? He did that. So everybody calm down a little bit. But, yeah, McComb, I mean, he was controlling range. He fought at his terms, his pace. Barboza, I mean, it just he was just beat, man. He was just beat. There was no, I mean, you can go. I think someone, yeah, here it is. Gary Spike O'Sullivan said, 8 rounds in, and there's no strong argument to be made that Barboza has won a round clearly. In my opinion, it's like, yeah, I mean, he really did. I mean, he didn't – that was a robbery. Also, Dakota Linger is a guy that beat, you know, Scobie, if I can call him Scobie. Sixth round, I think it was, right? TKO, had him hurt. Dakota bringing the pain. That was a nice big upset. Like I said, definitely, nice to see Brad – Brandon Adams back, no doubt about it. That was really dope. That was good. That was he's in that 154 pound overtime, and he will face Francisco Daniel, I think, Veron. That's who he'll face. Conwell definitely came out. And considering, I thought he looked pretty good. I thought he looked pretty sharp. What was it, sixth round? Landed a lot of his shots. That was good to get him back. Definitely need him back. And the announced attendance was 14,601. Down the stretch, like they normally do, but especially in this fight, down the stretch, they really dropped the ticket prices, which tells you that it was overpriced originally. And so had they priced it a little differently, they probably wouldn't have had to play those ticket games where they are taking tickets away, bringing them back, taking them back, acting like they're bringing back new ones, you know. But overall, considering most of the big fights they've had were, you know, not post. It still was, you know, it'd be interesting to see what that gate was. But, yeah, definitely excited about that. Yeah, I mean, it was 96, 94, 97, 93. There was one scorecard, 98, 92, from McComb. But, I mean, Barboza, 97, 93. Like, what in the F? And, yeah, I thought Beck looked like crap. I thought he looked like crap. I've never been that big with him. But let's go ahead and bring in Carcino into the fold. What's going on, Carcino? How the hell are you, man? What a freaking what a performance by Ryan Garcia, man. Just when a lot of people, you know, thought he was done, the dude pulls it off, man. How's it going?
Quite busy over here. You know, I only got about 20 minutes before we got to go live for the Lakers game. But, yeah, going into this, I would say a tremendous performance by Ryan Garcia. But to me, it was more of what Devin Haney allowed more than what Ryan Garcia was able to do. It was a fight, in my opinion, that was controlled mostly by Devin Haney. He controlled the fight. He had it on cruise control, and he fell asleep in the ring. And when you fall asleep getting comfortable and get caught, it changes the whole perspective of the fight. After the first round, he got caught cold. He fights like an amateur when it comes to defensive protection. He doesn't know how to stand still, step into the punches as they're coming in. He's actually backing straight up with his hand straight out majority of the time, with his chin straight in the air. It's unbelievable. He has zero defense. He keeps going for the same fake jab feint. The jab feint, when you act like you're going to throw the jab and then you just hook the punch around. Ryan Garcia was catching him with that every time he wanted to after the seventh round. After he caught him with it the first time around, he reversed it and kept doing the same move over and over. After he got hit with the first left hook in the second round, he landed his own hook. He has this wide hook that he throws, and he was able to hurt Ryan with it. Ryan took it and he fell back into, I'm just going to be cautious and not come in on Ryan Garcia. That first left hook he took got his attention, and it made him kind of gun-shy. And he starts stepping under the hooks when he should have actually just catch it. Keep the phone home. Keep your defense up. Take away his left hook. Keep the high guard. Work the jab. And get ready to counter his left hook every time, right hand, pop. Then you get under. Throw your right hand, fall into him, get under, smother his punches so that his hook won't have so much accuracy. If you're pulling back, you're giving him the range. He's throwing the left out as a range finder so he can hook around it to catch you with. Once he catches you with that, then he starts his offense. His right hand isn't, he don't really commit to his right hand as much as his left. But he has speed, and the size difference did make it match. He looked like he was about 148, 149 coming into the ring. He was way bigger than Devin Haney was. And that also was a factor. He's the bigger puncher anyway. And it's not the fact that not the fact that Devin Haney doesn't have any power. He just doesn't know how to commit to his power. He's strong. You could be strong and don't know how to punch with power. And that's pretty much Devin. He punches for contact almost like an amateur. So when you see this materialize, you start saying, okay, he's just trying to get points. Even when he was going into the shoulder roll, I had Devin Haney winning, like, after losing the first round, he won 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and was on his way to winning round
seven. Yeah, he had a good string. Yep.
Yeah, he won all of those rounds. He was controlling the fight. Then when it got to round seven.
Nine, you know, even after that round seven, he bounced back 8-9, too.
That's why I was explaining to the fans who were mostly casuals who wasn't really scoring the fight. I said, no, I could see how the 112-112 was going to could pop up because I was like, you got to understand, it's almost impossible to lose a fight with three knockdowns, especially if they happen in three different rounds. You almost don't want to get a knockdown consecutively in the same round because you'll only get one extra point. But if you get them in other rounds, that's 2 points. So you get a 2-point advantage in those rounds because they lose 2 points. So instead of a 10-7 round, you get two knockdowns in two separate rounds, that's 2-10-8 rounds. That's 4 points. So instead of 3 points, it's 4 points. But now you basically lose that point with the Ryan Garcia. You know, he's getting a
The deduction.
Yeah, he's getting a point deduction for that late shot, which, you know, the referee was really protecting Haney at that point. And then Haney got his legs back, and then round 8 and 9, he was back getting control and was, you know, avoiding the left hook. Then he gets complacent again. And, you know, he breaks concentration and, once again, falls for the same hook. He doesn't know how to grab. When he's hurt, he doesn't know how to go to his opponent, grab him to stop the momentum, turn him, and have them have to reset.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
it's more desperation, almost tackling.
Right. And it's like he doesn't
know how to
fight. And
that'll take it out of you, too. That takes it out of you if you're trying to tackle somebody and wrestle, you know?
Yeah. And he just really didn't know what to do in that situation. And I saw this in the Lomachenko fight. In the Lomachenko fight, when Lomachenko was bothering him with the angles and he was changing it, and he didn't know how to deal with Lomachenko too much but to try to tackle him. And that was it. He doesn't know how to grapple, protect himself. And he just happened to be bigger than Lomachenko. This is the first time he's really been in the ring with somebody who was bigger than him. Now you see that his, you know, his run is going to change. All Devin's activities are going to change for him because he's going to be in a position where it looked like he really fought to make 140, you know, to get to that weight. And
yeah,
I don't know if 140 is good for him or how long he can stay at 140, because at 147, he's going to need a lot. So at 147, he's going to need a lot. So he's going to probably be fighting at catch weights for a long period of time. A rematch, and everybody was saying about a rematch clause. There is no rematch clause, I don't think.
Right.
But he's still the champion at 143 pounds. Well, at 140 pounds, Devin Haney. So he's still the champion, you know, no matter what. You know, I know Oscar was pretty much on a high. He was completely out of his mind. The
Literally.
Champion, Ryan Garcia. I'm like, no, he's not the champion. He's forfeited the title.
Yeah, Sandor Martin is the bando, too.
He's the new face of boxing. And I was like, he's not. Really, I'm like, he lost to Gervonta Davis. How could he be calling the shots when he's fighting Gervonta Davis again if they have a rematch?
Right. Yeah, they're already negotiating the catchweight. You hear that? It's like, well,
yeah,
you should just shut up. I think you shouldn't give anything, you know?
Well, that's because that's what they want to do. They want to have a catch weight and make him fight at their terms. Like, he's got to fight at our terms now. It's like, well, Tank has proven he doesn't really need you, Ryan Garcia, to make a make a buck in the actual fight. So the way it's playing out is quite different because now he's talking about trying to fight Pitbull. He wants to fight Pitbull at 100 and 44, 43 pounds. He wants to fight at the catch weight. He wants him and fight the pit bull. And that'll be a difficult fight for Ryan Garcia. Ryan Garcia, his thing is he still telegraphs his punches. He fights in spots, but he gets hurt a lot in the fights. And then he starts moving around the ring, and he gave up rounds just by doing that. When he was starting off, he started holding and running and all of this, and the Pitbull crews can set traps and feints. And when Devin Haney was throwing feints, and like round two and three, it was bothering Ryan. Ryan was reacting to the feints, and he stopped doing that and just started telegraphing because it was too easy, because Ryan wasn't really punching. He was throwing punches in spurts. Like, he'll have a burst for like 30, 40 seconds. He throws some fast punches. Then he's inactive for like a minute and 30. He's like wrestling and holding. So you can see conditioning wasn't great for him in this fight, but he has the power. You know, he's the power puncher because he commits to his punches. Where Devin is really committed to just making contact, and I just don't think he knows how to punch with power. And he's probably strong enough. Like Ryan Garcia said, yeah, he hurt me in the second round. Like, you know, but I was like, oh, he's like, oh, okay, this guy has some power. With that being said, they didn't capitalize off of it. And because he went conservative and didn't want to, you know, commit to selling out. He was comfortable with just trying to get points and just make contact. Now, as far as the McConnell fight, that was something that was that was a sad fight to see. I was like, that guy won. Like, it was like somebody stole something away. He was still in the ring. And Barbosa and them team was like, they ran out of the ring, like, let's go, let's quick before somebody changed their mind. It was so sad in the way McConnell just in the ring, like, in total disbelief. And I said, oh, gosh, this is bad. But, yeah, I was telling people, though, if you get three knockdowns in a fight, I've seen the Samuel Peter Klitschko fight, but I was like, Klitschko got knocked down two times in one round, which made it 10-7. And then the other round was 10-8. So that's 5 points. So the only thing Stallion Peter needed to do is really win one other round. And he would have at least gotten a draw. So I'm like, three knockdowns guarantees you 6 points. And if you go to the cards, that's you. All you got to really do is win one other round in the fight. And the fight is yours. So with this being three knockdowns.
7-5. If you had Haney 7-5, that's where the draw is, because, like you said, the point deduction takes one back or knocks one off. So, yeah, you know, that 115, 113, all of a sudden, that brings you to 112, 112. So, yeah, I've seen some of that, too, where people don't get, like, well, that doesn't mean you have to score it 7-5 for Haney, but that one judge did, and so that's why the scorecards, you know, were what they were. Or at least that one.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Mannix had it like that. I could have been a draw, but I had it where one of the rounds, like the 12th round, I did not give the 12th round to Devin Haney. I gave it to Ryan Garcia, and that was probably why the difference in what didn't come off is that I think mine was like 111, 114, 111. So my thing is, the three knockdowns was major. So the majority of the rounds was won by Devin. It's just that when Ryan won them, he won them big. Knockdowns count. And he gave away the fight. He had the fight. But all he did, once he did, was get reckless, get careless in the ring, no defense. 10 straight in the air, and these are the guys that say they train with Mayweather. Learning to shoulder roll is one thing, But if you gotta know, if you're gonna train with Mayweather, and it's the little things he do that makes him great. It's not just, okay, he could do the shoulder roll. It takes everything. The things he do defensively to take away other people's offensive prowess, whatever they, if he gets hit with one shot, he's not going to get hit with that shot probably again.
Right.
So he takes that
and
away.
And he can cut the ring off too. If a guy's moving, yeah, he can cut the ring off. Look at what he did to Canelo right away. Put him right on the rope.
Yeah. And then it's just the way people move and the way they handle going through the process of adjustments on the fly to the style. Devin still fights in an amateurish style. Even when he was getting victories, it was still fighting in an amateurish style. It's just that he was getting the victory. In fights, he probably could have dominated had he stepped it up, or, you know, what they people say, he fights in a pro style. And that's pretty much what Ryan does. He fights in a pro style. You know, he doesn't really fight in a style that is not, like, feasible to the imagination of everybody else, you know. His thing is quite different. Ryan goes for the knockout. Like, if he feels and trusts and believes in his power, so he wants to commit to the punches, even though his chin is way in the air. Now, his problem is at 47, those are some big boys. So if he's in the ring with those guys, they can hurt Ryan really bad. They see that coming.
He'll need to use his jab a little bit more than that and set some stuff up.
Yeah, exactly. You got to use a jab. And he doesn't really commit to a jab. He uses it mostly as a range finder and to get the position for the leverage on the left hook. He'll feint and come around it or try to zip it. Everything's about the left hook. If they see that coming, a seasoned pro can hurt him really bad. They can see that punch coming a mile away. Now, they need to be careful with who they match with. I think that's why they're trying to call out Pitbull Davis. Because I'm like, look, he just got the 140. And he hurt Rolly and put Rolly on the skates in the first round. So I'm quite sure he's like, no, I want Pitbull because he's smaller and he feel like he can have an advantage over him. He'll be bigger. So it's a lot of intangibles in the mix.
Yeah.
I see where they're going in the direction. Now, I've been trying to get on this show about a 4 weeks to the world. And it's been like, and this is a Monday night, right, before the game,
yeah,
the tip-off. I got to get everything set to go. But, what I was going to tell you is that Errol Spence was leaving Derrick James. That was the news I had, and he was working with Boots Ennis' trainer. So that was one of the news, and that Deontay Wilder was going to leave Al Haymon, and he's going to leave the PBC. I think all that news has come out by now. So,
hey, do you think Bill Haney should step aside as far as being the lead voice in the corner then? Is it time to
I'm glad you can still be involved? Before this fight, I'm glad you brought that up. Before this fight, I said Bill Haney should be gone. Bill Haney is not, he's somebody, I tell him over and over again, he's riding the success of his son. And it's a lot of these father trainers, they think it's them. They relive in their life, think it's about them. Like, they're getting in the ring. It's like, you're not getting in the ring. He's about to fight everybody. And when they get the camera in their face, they become they get spoiled. And you got the Kevin Porter syndrome. You got all of these new flash of the pan, even Derrick James, when Errol was winning, he was the master trainer. And they keep the camera on him, and the media keeps interviewing him, and they fall in love with the camera, and they think it's all them. And that's exactly what this problem was, because in the corner, he was in a state of panic, jumping up and down. He couldn't get, trying to get Devin focused. In the first knockdown, he was in the middle of the interview, and he was talking. Yeah. We got caught with that. He took it up. Then he stopped. He looked, and then he was like, boom. He was on the ground, and he had to stop the entire interview and run over there to see what was going on with Devin and everything. But the advice he gave Devin was, it was simple, but he's not really giving him the adjustments he needed. And I'm like, I'm seeing the adjustments and what's wrong and what he needs to stop doing. And I don't think he's giving him the proper advice. To bring in a seasoned trainer, somebody that could work with him, would only help. But the egos are involved now. Too many egos. His ego will be bruised if somebody else is running the ship. They can't just, it's not about the fighter no more. It's about them. So a lot of these fighters now, they are comfortable with having who they like in the corner rather than somebody they need. I've seen it happen with Adrian Broner. He had, rest in peace, Mike Stafford in his corner. Mike is a manager. He's not really a boxing trainer. And they were winning basically off of their athletic ability. But other than that, you know, it's just another one of those situations where things don't go the way it should. And the calculations of things now, as far as what's happening out there in the moving clock of boxing, it's just so many narratives going on where people just don't get the scenarios and you don't get the fights. Everybody's fighting online. And it's confusing the casuals because they think the fight is going to be made, and then this fight is not happening at all. So as far as the division, you don't really know who's really the champion, who's the lineal champion, because there's so many titles now. Every fight is like a championship bout. It's like, okay.
Yeah, even like the silver. Dude, I heard last week someone say, the silverweight champs, like, instill the silver. What the fuck is that? I've never heard that. What do you mean the still? Instill. It's like, what, dude? That's not, let's save that. Let's save that for a different thing, man.
Yeah, and I'm like, his rankings are all crazy because guys are fighting at 140, 135, catch weight at 143. You don't know who or where anybody is or what's happening anymore. It's just like, okay, we're just here to make showcase fights and put them all on pay-per-view. And I'm like, that's nuts. Because now you can't really market or promote your fights and get people to know who they are before you even know them. They're in a big pay-per-view. It's like, what? You're supposed to work your way to get to a pay-per-view card. And I could see PBC is already cutting the budget. You know, they just did the first pay-per-view, and Amazon, you know, they distributed. And that first fight didn't really do as well as they thought it was going to do. And with Pitbull and Rolly, the fight came out well, the main event with, you know, Rolly.
Yeah, the card was really good, but yeah.
Yeah, but it just didn't perform as well because nobody really knew these guys. Like, Pitbull Cruz is the first time really some of them are paying attention to him, but it had a good turnout at the live gate. But as far as people streaming it on Amazon.
Going crazy for Pitbull, man. Pitbull's got potential, man. You know, you're right about that. They definitely were pumped about that, but overall.
So it's an entirely different aspect of looking at the landscape of boxing, you know, as far as the direction of where they're going to go in the future. And Golden Boy is like, they're putting their whole stock into Ryan Garcia, and they just got a big win. So they're going to be trying to lobby for a rematch, Devin Haney is, and they're going to make the adjustments. And he could possibly win depending on what happens with Ryan Garcia if he takes things seriously. But, I mean, Devin's in trouble. You know, he's finally gotten to a point where this is the catch-22 because he would have lost to Shakur Stevenson. And I told people this countless times, like, he would lose to Shakir Stevenson. I'm like, Shakir Stevenson, he's made a mistake. He should have fought him early before he filled into the division. Now he's a full-fledged 140. And he's way more sharp defensively than Devin Haney is. And I said, Devin will be in trouble with Shakir Stevenson. And so would Ryan Garcia. Ryan has a big left hook. Shakir would take that away from him. He knows what to do defensively to take that away. Now, he might not have the power to stop Ryan or something like that, but I think by him filling in to the size of the weight class, I think that that would be very telling. I would love to see Shakir Stevenson fight Ryan Garcia, but Oscar De La Hoya don't like that fight at all. He's not even looking to call that fight out. That is not something that's going to pique his interest, because he knows how dangerous of a fight that is for him.
You think Shakur will re-sign with Top Rank, or do you think he'll test the free agency after this fight?
After this fight, he should test the free agent market and see what he could do as basically a lone gunman. And if they don't come with a good enough deal to keep him on retainer or being able to retain him, then, yeah, definitely. Because everybody else is making money and he's sitting on the sideline. And then you see Terrence Crawford, you know, the PBC is basically trying to keep fighters away from him now because he's like, look, you guys aren't living up to the obligations here. And I know y'all going through a transition, but y'all still, like, trying to avoid – you know, the situation of having me on the fight.
He never signed a contract with PBC, though.
No. They had an agreement.
That's the problem. That's the problem.
Yeah, they had a three-fight agreement just in like, terms of principle. So he had the rights to a rematch. Errol did. But Errol was going to exercise the rematch, but once they lost the Showtime deal and they had new distribution deal in place, they never got back to where they were supposed to be as a team, as a team of Team Crawford. They never got back to where they were supposed to be with the negotiations with Errol, because Errol's team was dragging their feet like they did with making the fight.
Well, until he signs like a multi-fight deal, I doubt they allow Crawford to fight the big guys, you know, unless it's Canelo or something like that.
Yeah, but he can fight Canelo.
And that is kind of the boxing business, you know.
Yeah, and they're going to try to round him out. So he might go to Matchroom soon too. But Boots Ennis has went over there, and Errol Spence is working with Boots Ennis' trainer. That's who's been working with Errol. Now, the reason why Derrick James and Errol Spence are having this fallout is not even about boxing. It's about the actual money. Now,
right.
He's supposed to get 10%. And for some reason, Derrick James believes he's supposed to get 10% of the pay-per-view.
Right. Lucy Carcino?
No, something crazy just happened in the Knicks game. That's just unbelievable. This is the craziest set of events I've ever seen. That is just unbelievable. They just let this happen. The 76ers did something really stupid and gave up the lead with like 13 seconds to go. That was just unbelievable. The referees did not call a foul. Maxie was clearly fouled. He should have called a timeout. I guess they didn't have any. But my goodness, get a jump ball. You don't throw the ball back under your basket. Down 5 with like 20 seconds to go, and now they got a 1-point lead, the Knicks. That's crazy. I got to get ready to roll. It's
all right, sir. Well, thanks for taking some time out. Much appreciated.
Thank you guys, man, for having me on. Even though this is a Monday night, we've made it work. And nothing like some good old playoff ball. So all sports playoff rules. But, yeah. I love this.
All right, man. Well, enjoy the game tonight.
Yeah, I'm going to try because my betting sheets are looking a little shaky right now.
All right, you think the Lakers can win a game in this series, or you think it's going to be a sweep?
Oh, no, they're going to win a game. It's going to go about 6 or 7 games.
They looked good for a lot of that game, and then they sat down LeBron, and it was like, all right, well, Nuggets got a lead. They look good, though, for a while, you know, but that's the thing. You got to keep it going with the Nuggets.
I'll bet on them tonight to win. So.
Okay.
All right.
All right, man. Well, enjoy the game. Thanks for taking time out. I appreciate it, man. You take it easy.
All right. You too.
All right, buddy. Later.
Bye-bye.
All righty. Let me see a couple more things as we kind of break this down. I only got a chunk of time here. The card that people were talking about, that I've gotten some messages on and that folks were talking about today, and messaged me while I was talking about that Leo Senecker's Abner Morris. Like I said, I loved Abner Morris and Spider, but I'm not a big fan of that one. But it's August 3rd. It's in L.A. It's at Memorial Coliseum. And, Madrimov and Terrence Crawford, right? That's the fight that we basically know is a done deal. And like I said, I wouldn't doubt if that turns into a, because he's got the WBA. Crawford's, in tight with the WBO. It's already going to be an internship. We'll see, what decision will have come that night, by the time we get there, you never know. But Andy Ruiz and Pitbull Cruz is on the card, and maybe that Leo Santa Cruz and Mares. And I know a casual fight fan that's there, it's on the undercard. I'm sure they'll be like, oh, dude, I remember this fight. But overall, I'm not a big fan of that one, I got to admit. There are some... there are some speculation about who would be fighting who. Andy Ruiz, they mentioned, possibly that it would be, Big Baby Miller. That's a possibility. We don't know exactly, what's what when it comes to that. Now, as far as, going up to 47 for Garcia and for Devin Haney, you do have Barrios and Stanonius, Crawley, and I guess you could say Connor Benn's there. There's some fights up there. Obviously, Ennis is technically Crawford still has the WBO, the WBC, and WBA and all that, but it appears that him going up a weight, it'll probably be dropped, So you don't have, a lot of big names. Now, Ryan Garcia, both him and Devin Haney in all these fights, as long as Crawford's not at 147, are the A-sides, right? Obviously, coming out a big win for Ryan Garcia, I think that weight class fits in more.
Sanonius has a fight that I think he can win, but he has been out of the ring. You know, that whole thing about, well, first, I know it was his appendix, right? I think it was his appendix. And then Virgil Ortiz, you know, has had some issues. So those guys never fought. We thought that was going to be a great fight. Didn't happen. So there's, like, fights they can win up there, no doubt. But, you know, there's not a lot of big fights beyond Boots Ennis. That's, like I said, once again, assuming Crawford doesn't fight at 47 anymore. Otherwise, that's a huge fight, you know. Now, as far as someone just messaged me, Wilder didn't leave the PBC. He's not. Yeah, Wilder had already signed with Saudi game a three-fight deal. That was what was reported. So this is, whether this is a one-off or whatever, he was going to fight in Saudi Arabia again, Wilder, probably again, right? So the matchroom thing, you can use a free agent, you know, a clause. So that's what Eddie did. So it's not like had he been putting up the money, I doubt he would have done it for this fight. But, you know, like I said, Saudi's banked. So, and once again, you need a promoter over there. So that's really what that is. As far as, you know, just clarifying that, what Carcino said. But he's not. The heavyweights, pretty much, besides like Jared Anderson and a couple of that top rank gap, it's in Saudi Arabia. I mean, Frank Sanchez is fighting in Saudi Arabia. He didn't leave the PBC, from my understanding. But that's where the money is. That's where the fight is. So, but yeah, I mean, you know, we'll see. We'll see where those guys end up. You know, it's tough to say where those guys will end up as far as, you know, big fight and whatnot. But, yeah, the Cruz would make sense, and maybe they can – I think they'd really have to flash a lot of money his way. Now, as far as the – another thing about the weigh-in, as far as, you know, the overweight and the payout, I'm hearing that it actually was like a $600,000 payment, not the $500,000 per pound. I heard that it was $600,000 and then some, you know, a little percentage, like 2 percentage points or 3 percentage points or something like that. And that would be, you know, if that happens. And Dan Raphael has, you know, using his source anyway, said the same thing, that it's actually it was $600,000, 2% of the upside, and he even mentions if it reaches the upside threshold, it's not the 1.5 that everybody was talking about. And that had to do with the, you know, the bet that they made, that it never is a real thing, you know, if we're being honest. And, yeah, I mean, the Ryan Garcia tank, like I said, it's still on the table. Definitely is. But like I said, Ryan would have to discount his win against Devin if he's going to discount his loss against Tank. That's just how it goes because of the weight stuff, you know. But he did say that, you know, you can't fight below 143 anymore. Sounds like they'd be open for catch weights, but he's going to go to welterweight. Either way, once you're over 140, you're at welterweight. So, but yeah, De La Hoya did say 145 for Tank. But, yeah, I did like what I saw out of Conwell. I thought he was good. Lee Grope said Charles Conwell looked sharp in his scoring a 6-round knockout of Nathan Gallimore in the first fight of the Haney pay-per-view. Conwell landed 50% or more power shots in 5-6 rounds and connected on 41% overall. Dakota, this is Boxing Esquire. Dakota Linger is a fighter you better prepare for. He brings pressure and isn't afraid to let his hands go. Scobie didn't react well getting hit. It's an inexperienced show, but a solid card for OTX overtime. Yep, that about sums it up. Timothy Bradley was like, he might as well, you know, if Garcia wins, he might as well stop commentating. But now he's saying, and obviously he's joking, he's got a top, you know, a top rank contract, so he's not just going to stop. but he says, I saw lately that for fight hype, he said, oh, you know, the accomplishment is nothing. Didn't beat Haney on 11 playing field. I claim he knows what he's talking about. So whatever. Eddie actually from Boxing News said he revealed that Matchroom wanted Ryan Garcia to to weigh in the next morning on Saturday, but Bill Haney didn't want it to happen because he didn't want it pushed because they rehydrate, you know, because they're worried about their rehydration. So I think thing is, could you have done that straight up anyway? Instead, it wasn't, you know, instead of them. And Jose Venezuela was who John was talking about for Pitbull Cruz, too, who can punch, young guy, but he can punch. Sounded like there was going to be a rematch in there. But I don't know what's going on with that. But that might be, if Pitbull fights him, that would be pretty big. Jake Donovan was talking about, about that Santa Cruz Mares, he was saying that, you know, he's not sure how the fight will even get approved from the California Commission. Though, of course, we know any fight gets approved by any commission. There's a thought for it, you know. I think my Dreamoff is a solid fighter at 154. I think he can make some noise. Do I think he's going to beat Crawford? No. But I don't think it's a bad fight, especially for his first fight at 154. I mean, it's a solid fight. And it sounds like Saudi's delivering the money. So I talked about this in the last couple of weeks, definitely last weekend, and saying how, you know, if Saudi gets involved, then, you know, then that is the money. Part of it is the money. Most of it's the money. It's not, well, I have to fight a name. Well, generally, you have to fight a name to be able to do that. Now, Turkey over there in the UK said that he has plans. He has plans in mind for both Canelo and David Benavidez, but not fighting each other. He wants to match up with Canelo. So Crawford and Canelo, I mean, Benavidez is the winner of the Derby and Bibb. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how that all, you know, turns out. I don't know. Ryan Garcia said, wait, Ryan Garcia, RJ, and Errol Spence would be crazy. He said, nah, y'all want that? Let me hear you, you know, saying, oh, I can make that fight. I don't know what weight class that would be at, though. Oscar, talking about nobody is coming to my country or my city and think they can take over boxing. I'm a fighter first, and I will fight hard for what I love most, and that's boxing, Viva. And that's a shot at that August 3rd card, or August 2nd, whichever it is. Whatever. I did hear people say, this is Fan Scorecard saying, who agrees that referee Harvey Dock should be investigated by the NY Athletic Commission for deducting the point against Garcia after the knockdown, then allowing Haney to illegally hold without consequences? Are you saying he had the over? Is that what you're saying? Lampley called this upset from Ryan Garcia bigger than Tyson Douglas. I mean, come on, dude. What are we talking about, dude? Are you serious? Did he really say that? This is what Bradley said pre-fight. If somehow Ryan Garcia pulls off the upset, oh my gosh, I might as well quit commentary and leave the game of boxing alone. I'm not going to lie, because I just don't see it happening. But he didn't say, he said I might as well. He wasn't saying I will. This is Najee Cigar Talk. Definitely check that out if you haven't. I honestly feel like Bill Haney should just be Devin's promoter, not trainer. A few things Dev needs to tighten up on, and it wasn't a great game plan of Dev. Dev is mentally tough. He can come back from this moment. Y'all shouldn't write him off. I agree. I think it's time to move on with that. Connor Ben was shouting out, you know, he wants a fight with Ryan Garcia. He says, you know, I'm about the business, Garcia said, but you can't even fight in your own country. What the fuck? This is Adrian Delgado. Ryan Garcia has developed the unique ability to instinctively, explosively land in tight windows. It's really the punch you don't see. I also think there's a mental aspect at play when matching up against Ryan Garcia, given that he lands with the exceptional timing when least expected. That's a fair point, that's for sure. I really think that he needs to move on there. He definitely needs to move on, speaking of Devin. Not Bill Haney, like, out of the picture, just not be the trainer. I think that's fair, you know? Tim Zhu, I'm going to start drinking beer from now on after the weigh-in. What a performance, Ryan Garcia. That's funny. That's really funny. You know, people saying this isn't a legitimate win, just more stuff like that. And here's Delgado again. He says Tank has a hell of a chin. Dude took a left hook straight right from Ryan before he landed the body shot that ended the fight. Yeah, Tank's pretty underrated fighter. We just got to see him in there with, higher level guys. I like the Frank Martin fight. It's a solid fight. And then we'll see, what's next after that. Don't write off Haney, man. Don't do that. Don't do that. Let the guy, reload. But let him figure it out. Go back to the drawing board. That type of thing. Let's not do that. Adam from SN Boxing. Let's talk marketing. Dominantly American audience for this pay-per-view. Why not show a picture of Wilder's thing instead of Warren and Hearn? I thought the same thing. Does Warren and Hearn particularly matter with the pay-per-view audience? It doesn't have to be as complicated. I agree. I like those fights, but I didn't like the sit down before the fights were even made. You know what I mean? DAZN should have their own this is Adam again. DAZN shouldn't have their own commentators making picks on their broadcast periods. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that. I don't like that either. I think that's silly. Remember I talked to you about Morrell going up to 175 and he's going to take on Hot Rod. I think it's going to be in Minneapolis. It could be on that undercard, Frank and Tank and Benavidez and Voshtik. But just like that, the WBA is going to make, it sounds like, Edgar Berlanga, the mandatory challenger for Canelo Alvarez. Here's his excellence, Turkey. He says, I don't care about the opinion of promoters. I only care about the happiness of the fans. And I look toward the boxers as brothers of mine. And my only concern is to bring the fights that the fans are waiting for a long time. I love you fans. I work for you. And you saw a picture of Turkey, with some PBC representation, Louis DeCubis Jr. in the house, among others. So it does seem like there is something going there. Oh, by the way, about that Madrimov fight, TGV Promotions on behalf of Charlo said that they sent a letter Thursday saying, hey, we'd like to request as a champion in recess, we want to fight. We want to fight for that belt, buddy. But in that thing, there's like a reinstated, he wants to be reinstated and get that fight, but he also realizes, okay, if you're going to make that fight, that's cool. I'll get the winner type thing. So we'll see how that goes. We'll see how that goes. And look at this. I feel great. I got a 3-pound advantage. Let's go. Winners do what they have to do, and I'm still sharp. That's what Ryan Garcia said the day before, and he was right. But, yeah, that Berlanga fight, that shit, didn't take long for the WBA to go right there with it, did it? That was pretty crazy. I saw Gervonta and Shakur going at it, If Shakur wants that fight, he's gonna have to sign with the PBC. It's about to cut off. I'm probably gonna shut this puppy down. I don't want to ignore my UK fight fans because they've been kind of freaking out about the price raises for the zone. I get it. It is what it is, man. They've been getting us here, dude. They've been getting us here like crazy. So it is what it is, man. I don't know what to tell you. But, yeah, it does suck, dude. I mean, it's the the most expensive streaming service here, period, in the U.S. So that kind of tells you where it's at. Anyway, I'm going to get out of here. Enjoy the week, guys, and, you know, try not to get in too much trouble.